Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Dean Summers, Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66 WFAN.
Well, it is a very good evening to you, and I'll be at 8:05 even on a baseball and football Friday evening on your fan, New York City. Steve Summers here, you there. Peter Hoffman, Paulie Rosenberg there on the other side of the glass, and the 1-877-337-6666 for another two-hour Friday schmooze right up until JJ After Dark at 10 on your fan, New York City. And what a pleasure it is to welcome for a couple of minutes Ron Darling. Ron, how are you?
I'm doing great, Schmooze. I feel bad because I feel like we haven't talked in like so long. I don't get it, but it's so nice to speak to you again.
Well, it's and there you go again, making news. What is going on with you, you controversial analyst, you?
I know. I always thought that I was the least controversial person of all time, but I guess I did make some news. And listen. When you do a 1,000 live hours of TV,
sure,
or 1,000 live hours of radio, as you know, a year, at some point you make a mistake or you say something you didn't want to say, and that happens. You know?
Do you think you made a mistake with the Luis Severino business?
I don't. I think I was spot on about it, but I think that the powers that be don't want to hear that kind of stuff, and I understand that. I totally understand that, but I honestly wasn't. I would never have brought it up, and you know this better than I do.
Mm-hmm.
TV magic works in this way: is that if you have 2 minutes of fill, and that means that at some point you have to speak about something that you have no idea about,
mm-hmm,
you speak about something that just happened. So we ended up talking about Luis Severino only because he wasn't out there on time. And listen, I love him as an athlete and as a young person, and I feel bad if I made him put him in a bad place. But you know, this is how it works. At some point, if you're not out there on time, people who are watching will talk about it.
Well, and Brian Cashman, who was giving us the State of the Union with the New York Yankees, reflecting back on the entire season and postseason, was on earlier today on The Fan, and he, of course, had something to say because he was asked about what you said about Severino,
yeah,
and he said, you know, he said Ron Darling was a great pitcher and is a great analyst, but he doesn't know our team, and this was more or less, in so many words, standard operating procedure,
yeah,
for a Luis Severino, and you know, Ron, that they're not going to throw their player under the bus, and they are certainly not going to say anything that really reflects on Boone and Larry Rothschild and the organization for not possibly noticing what was going on or not going on with Severino.
Well, first, listen, no one has more respect for Brian Cashman than me. I think he's one of the best GMs in probably the last 25, 30 years. So I respect his opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Second, I think as far as Boone and Rothschild are concerned, if I was a player still, I would love my manager and pitching coach to have my back each and every time.
Sure.
I think that's a very important thing. And listen, I'm just an old, used-to-be player, and used-to-be not so bad, and I'm just bringing up things that I find interesting. And I think, you know, to me, and I know the fans who watch the game find it interesting also. And that doesn't mean that it's good or bad or indifferent or whatever. It's just about, talking about things that are different. than balls and strikes.
And a lot of us thought you were being very observant and noticing something that possibly so many others would be taking for granted and possibly not noticing it at all. And certainly you can make the argument that Boone and Rothschild, if he was a little bit too late and not knowing what time the game was supposed to start, because it was the general impression or with those around Severino that his thinking was the game was to start after 8 o'clock and not 7:42?
Well, I will tell you, Steve, to protect Larry and Aaron, is that no pitcher in the history of the world has ever been in charge of pitching coach in charge of his pitcher. Every pitcher knows what time he's supposed to start. He works backwards from, let's say the start is at 7:40, mm-hmm. like it was for Severino. You work backwards. So 15 minutes you have to throw, 5 minutes you need to rest. So you have to be done at 7:35. That means you start at 7:20. That gets you 15 minutes right there. He didn't start warming up till 7:32. That's why I noticed. And I didn't notice to embarrass the young great pitcher because he is great. It was just an opportunity to go, whoa, that's a different way to get ready. And you know what? I think that the great thing about the Yankees in this situation is you always protect this young player because he's going to be a great, great pitcher, like an amazing pitcher that we're going to talk about for years. But at the same time, it's also my job to try to point out different things.
Yeah, and what we all know, Yankee fans, Metropolitan fans, anyone that has seen or heard your work knows that embarrassing or being outwardly controversial is not really your style. And you have always been fair, whether it's analyzing the Mets, whether it's what you were doing with TBS and what you will be doing with TBS, with the coverage of the ALCS, with Brian Anderson and Lauren Chahadi. Let me get that plug in for you. But what you were doing was your job, and you were bringing to light something that was really very important. My next question would be, do you think it affected his outing when he finally did start that Game 3 against Boston?
I don't. I think for two reasons. One, I think that, he has a body of work in the second half that has showed you that for whatever reason, his amazing first half where you can make an argument he was the best pitcher in baseball when he was 14-2, mm-hmm. and I don't know what his ERA was, but his second half was not. So it was a continuation of him trying to find out or figure out how good he could be. Second is that, this is one of the greatest things about baseball. And I remember when I was a kid and I had the great Mel Stottlemyre as a coach, I had struggled for a couple of starts and I asked him, what am I doing wrong? And he said, you're not doing anything wrong. The other team is trying. And I think that was the greatest piece of advice I ever got because, in this league, everyone is really, really good. And it doesn't matter how good you are. At times, you can come up short. I know there's been a lot about him tipping pitches. Who knows if that's right or wrong. But I do know that, when it comes to this time of year, I've had some of the greatest experiences of my life and greatest moments of my life, and I've had some of the darkest moments of my life in the postseason. Mm. It just happens. Whether you like it or not, unless you're a John Smoltz or a Justin Verlander or a Sandy Koufax or Whitey Ford, what happens in the postseason is that you'll have these moments that will change your life and moments that will almost feel like you want to end your life. And that's just how it goes.
Well, and I think we all understand that, too. The interesting thing is that what we continue to see in the postseason is Angel Hernandez. How is he still with a job umpiring?
Yeah, well, it's a great question. Steve, and I think that I think what happens with baseball is that at some point, you know, there's so many umpires and they decide late in the season who's going to do this, who's going to do that. I think that there's an amazing amount of, I mean, this is like any other scenario. There's an amazing amount, 90% of the umpires that are just amazing, and they have to be qualified or looked at under the guys who are not so amazing. I think Angel has a history of confrontation with players. I think he has a history of inability to do his job at the highest level. And I think at some point, hopefully, you know, he will find something else to do, or they will find him something else to do.
Yeah. Well, now we move on with the final four, and you're going to be doing with the ALCS. A great game one matchup with Sale. Chris Sale coming out of the bullpen in the eighth inning. Alex Cora, whatever move he made against the Yankees, it was working, Ron.
Well, I think Alex Cora, every move he made turned to gold. Like, think about the first game, he brought Porcello in to get two outs before Kimbrel got the four-out save. You got Sale getting a clean eighth inning with the eighth, ninth, and first hitter. Mm-hmm. I think that... you know, that is the new wave. We saw it last year with Morton and Peacock for the Houston Astros. I mean, at some point, you have to realize that relievers are relievers, but the reason you charge your starting pitchers with getting 18 to 21 outs is because they're the best pitchers on your team. So when it comes to the postseason, you're like, well, wait a minute. We have all these guys in the bullpen, and they're talented, but the guy that starts every fifth day is more talented than any of these guys. So I think that's, you know, where the game is going. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see Porcello in game one, or David Price getting outs, or Morton getting outs for Houston Astros. You'll see starting pitchers getting big outs.
And we saw that. Last year, too. And we know, of course, an Achilles heel with Boston, the bullpen, of course, and maybe the least flawed team of all the teams, National League and in the American League as well, could be Houston. They don't have too many weaknesses, Ron.
You know, I think they're the best team going in. I mean, if you had to bet your house, you'd bet it on Houston right now with the four teams remaining, because they are, you know, they're kind of built in an old-fashioned way. Is that they have guys who start games who give you six quality innings, then they go to the bullpen. But I would not be surprised if it was someone of the ilk who are doing new stuff and starting two starters and maybe using the bullpen. The Brewers, I know that, you know, everyone thinks the Dodgers are going to walk in, but the Brewers are the wild card of this playoffs. Of all the four teams left, they're the wild card. They could do something that is different than any team's done before, and that is pitch a guy until he stinks and then bring the next guy in. You know what I mean? And that's kind of how it's going to work in baseball, I think, for the next dozen years or so.
This is like Jeopardy, because you just gave me the answer before the question. I was going to ask you about the bullpenning with the opener. We don't have a starter anymore. We have openers, and Milwaukee has certainly gotten themselves very far this season with the openers that they have. They have one good starter, and that's about it.
What is your right, Steve? I think they even call it the initial out getter. I think they call it in Milwaukee. So you have the opener, you have bullpenning, you have the initial out getter. I think really at some point you have to understand what talent you have, how to make it work, and how to make it work in a short period of time. I think teams are doing that better than they've ever done before.
And would you go with Milwaukee over the Dodgers? Would you take a team that won 108 regular season games, Boston? Do you think those two teams are going to make it to the World Series, Ron?
I think it's Brewers, Houston is what I think is going to happen. Mm-hmm. I know every exec that I work with would want the Dodgers, Red Sox. But I just think the Brewers are on such a roll. They've won 11 straight. I think that's not going to stop. And I think that Houston is cocky enough to feel as though they're going to make it through. And, you know, I'm here. I'm a Boston native. Not that I root for the Red Sox, but I would think that, you know, despite their 108 wins, we've seen before with the Mariners in 01 when they won 116, team that wins the most doesn't always win. I was lucky. I played with a team that won 108, and we somehow got through, but with a lot of luck.
And just to let you know, the winningest New York team over the last 3 months, with a record of 45-37 over their final 82 games, the New York Metropolitans.
Well, I can't wait to get to Port St. Lucie then, now that you told me that.
Well, have a good series. Have a lot of fun, and we'll all be listening and watching. And thanks so much. It means a lot to have you on for a couple of minutes, for sure.
Listen, Steve, let's do this again. You know, I love you, and I love your show, and I know your fans love you. So thank you very much.
I can't thank you enough. Thanks, Ron.
Okay.
Ron Darling with the TBS, and again, he'll be with the exclusive. That means no one else will be televising. TBS and Ron Darling, along with Brian Anderson and Lauren Shahadi. With the ALCS. All right.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.